Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, where real people share real life experiences and the tools they develop to move forward and live their best life. I'm Michelle Scharf.
And I'm Jenny Taylor. And Michelle, today we have our good friend Julie Lee back. Julie, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you, girl?
Oh, Julie. So Julie was one of our first guests. I can't remember when, but we will for sure link to the first episode in our show notes. I met Julie when she invited me on her podcast, which was called I See You, and that was shortly after my husband was killed. We invited her on our podcast. She talked a lot about, she's written a book called I See You. She has a training platform for educators and adults and kids and just all things called I See You. She's got other keynote addresses she gives. Julie, today we want to talk about a thing we're going to call next level resilience. You're already one of the most resilient people I know. You were when we talked to you a couple of years ago. You were for the entire time you hosted, what, over 100 podcast episodes of your own, your book, everything else. But we want to jump in. Remind us who you are a little bit for people who haven't heard that first episode. And then let's kind of talk about that next level resilience.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm Julie Lee, like you said, and I'm primarily a keynote speaker. I did host the ICU podcast for about 2.5 years. With 100 episodes, and that's kind of what got me into being contracted to write my book, I See You, How Compassion and Connection Save Lives. And then I went on a couple years later to publish a book, Broccoli Punzel, through my same publisher, which is very much so the I See You message in children form. And so I primarily keynote speak now. I have had a lot of change in my life since then, just my own personal life as well as professional. I had a sister that passed away from cancer who was just my closest, bestest friend. And so that's been a big adjustment as we're speaking specifically to resilience. And I also got a divorce. And so there's been a lot of change and upheaval in my life. So I've had this opportunity to, like, I thought I was resilient before, but this opportunity to, try and up level my resiliency, just dealing with loss and dealing with a lot of change, and some change really exciting and some hard. And it's definitely also impacted my speaking, as far as it's really caused me to have to really practice what I preach. And it's been good. It's been so good to speak about principles of connection and how human connection builds resiliency and how it makes relationships able to last even during hard things. It's been good to have that reinforced in my mind as I'm doing that professionally, because I'm like, oh, I am needing this like right now. We all need it. We all need the reminders. So yeah, good stuff, resiliency. Let's talk more about it.
Okay, I love that. And I think Michelle and I would both agree this podcast has been good for us to reinforce what we know and need to know about resilience. Anytime I speak, and or Michelle, anytime, whether we're speaking in public or just a conversation, when you hear yourself saying something that you know to be true, that's kind of powerful. And sometimes when you don't feel as strong or as resilient, you can fall back on maybe what you did at one point feel or know was so true. So tell us, you kind of quickly mentioned Amy, your sister. You quickly mentioned a recent divorce. Let's take those one at a time. Let's talk a little bit about Amy, resilience, lessons you learned with her as she battled her cancer journey and ultimately passed away from that cancer. What does resilience look like in terms of that sisterly relationship and the journey you shared with Amy?
You know, what comes to mind first, I think part of resiliency that maybe sometimes we don't address is the ability to lean into the hard emotion when it comes and feel it, which can be really scary. But she taught me a lot about this. She taught me, I mean, I remember getting a text from her at like 11 o'clock at night, just having a really hard night and needed me. And it was funny because I had taken some medication that makes me very sleepy. And I was like, oh, shoot. And I went and I had some Diet Coke in the fridge and drank it real quick because she was going to come over, because I knew like those moments are sacred when you're just having to lean into the hard. But I saw that as she, you know, she came over and we sit on my couch and we cry and we talk till 3 a.m. about all the hard things. Oh, knowing that you're going to die and leaving 6 kids. I mean, it's just, there's nothing like that. But really, like, she was so good at leaning into the hard. And then when she was done with it, then let's watch a funny movie. Let's watch The Office. And so something she taught me about resiliency, and I've really seen her in the way she prepared her kids to lose her, is to feel it hard when you feel it, and then to choose joy and find things that you love other times. And that's really a way to kind of absorb the shock of all the hard is to find all that joy. And for me, I mean, one of my greatest sources of joy is my human connection with other people. And I saw her do that, just lean into the connection and have humor and have fun with people and spend and be with people. I think that was really, really, I think of like a car going over speed bumps, and I don't know a lot about auto care or anything like that, which you'll be able to tell, but there's like the shocks or the suspension or something that it makes it so that you don't feel the bumps as hard.
Yeah.
And I feel like those shocks and that suspension, I mean, that is that human connection and finding joy when you can, but also leaning into the hard when you need to get through that too.
So many good things there. I love mm-hmm. the analogy of the car. I'm thinking we have some family property up in the mountains where you go from a nice paved road to a pretty well-maintained dirt road to a really bumpy dirt road to the gravel drive toward our property. And depending on which car I'm driving, I do feel those bumps more,
right?
Same road.
Right.
Same bumps are there, same rocks, same divots. But if I'm in a certain vehicle that's built for that, that's been prepared and maintained for that, then I can weather that better. If I'm in my daughter's little itty bitty, you know, light hybrid car that kind of floats on things, that's a different experience than if I'm in my giant 12 passenger van. And I think that's a great visual for us to picture, you know, what kind of shocks and suspension do we have as humans? Have I buffered myself with good human connection and relationship? Have I strengthened my own resilience with truths I know or values that are important to me, with a safety net of sorts,
yeah.
so that when I go over those bumps, or do I just cry about the fact that the road is so bumpy? Because guess
right.
what? The road is going to be bumpy
Absolutely.
Sometimes more than others.
I love this analogy. Of course, you know I love all
She's
things
a car.
Car
person.
All things car.
Give she me, knows way more than
so
us,
you
Julie.
You know what I said that was wrong.
Give me... No,
Can
it's
you
fine.
Correct us here, please?
Give me... Actually, I don't know a lot about like the size of engines or those
she
kind of things.
She just knows how to race them.
I don't know how to race them, but I'm going to learn. But this conversation reminds me of Reinvent Your Life with Mel Robbins. And she uses driving as a metaphor for life, her life coaching program, or at least through her story, Reinvent Your Life. And I love this analogy of the shocks being able to absorb that and those connections being the shock absorbers.
Yeah.
Without connection, we don't have anyone to rely on, and it's just ourselves, and that's isolating and lonely, and we were not made to be alone in life.
No.
And so I love that analogy. I just love the analogy because I love cars, and it feeds right back into
that. I also
that.
Love what you said, that Amy helped you learn about leaning into the difficult. And Michelle, we've talked about that so many times. A huge component of resilience is acceptance. I have to accept that this is hard, awful, unfair, unjust, difficult, fill in the blank.
Right.
And I can let myself own that and feel that and writhe and wiggle in it. And then I can get myself out of that.
Yeah.
But if you try to sweep it under the rug, you're usually just going to have it fester. Yeah. And then that, mm-hmm. you know, that breaks your whole shocks and suspension system.
I actually was writing a little video clip to do today. I haven't done it yet, but I wanted to talk about how journaling is such a great exercise for all of us. And if you keep a journal, it is so interesting. And if you refer back to like Matthew McConaughey's Green Lights, it's a great example mm-hmm. as using your journal to reflect back on your life and to revisit those lessons that maybe you've already learned that you might be revisiting. That book is a great example of why journaling is awesome. But to step that up a notch and to add a string of resiliency or an exercise of resiliency, I want to encourage people to at least include 3 to 5 things that they are grateful for.
Yeah, that gratitude side of reflecting.
Right.
I love that.
And so I love everywhere where we're going here with this. Looks like we need to take a quick break already.
Oh, my goodness. How is that possible?
Hold on, people.
We'll be right back.
Flying right by. We're back. Julie, tell us what you're doing today and tell us about how you've notched up your next level of resiliency.
Well, I think one of the greatest teachers has been trying to help my kids be more resilient through all these life changes, through losing an aunt, through now navigating living at two households where their parents aren't together. And it's taught me a lot about just our basic human needs. A big one I feel like is just helping my kids not be afraid of change and of talking a lot, lots of talking, lots of processing, lots of being okay with negative emotion. I think so much of my suffering in life has come because I wasn't okay with negative emotion. Like I felt like I needed to fix it and change it. And so much of the struggle came because of that. And as I've gone through these things personally, and also at the same time, been continuing to build my speaking business and writing and doing things like that. I mean, it's knocked me off my feet. There's no question. I have not been as productive as I once was. I have not put in the time the way I did, but learning to have that self-compassion through it and not give up on it, not give up on everything because I'm not doing it at the level I was before, has been really important. I mean, self-compassion has always been really important to me, but as far as building resilience through this, it's learning to be kind to myself during it, but not give up on everything, right? But right. Just recognizing there are
not make excuses, but allow space.
Yeah. Well, and that's such an interesting thing about, I was just doing a keynote to a women's leadership group. And it's so interesting how we talk about self-compassion, and so many people believe the myth that self-compassion, giving yourself a pass of saying that you're perfect. And I'm like, no. Self-compassion is relating to yourself kindly. So
wait, say that again. I love that.
Well, I hope I say it the right way then. I hope this is true. No, it's self-compassion is relating to yourself kindly.
Beautiful.
So, like my child that I love, I'm not going to say to them, if they make a mistake on a worksheet, I'm not going to say, yeah, that's perfect, that's correct. No. But I'm also not going to say, you're the worst, you're an idiot. Like, how could you do that, right?
Yeah, how could you?
Hey, that wasn't correct. How do we fix this, right? But it's going to be a kind tone. And so I always use the example with teachers, like if all of your kids bomb the test, you're not going to say, oh, it was all their fault, I had nothing to do with it, right? That's not self-compassion. Self-compassion is like, we got to recognize reality, but it's not beating ourselves up. It's saying, okay, you know what? Every teacher has these moments. What can I do to help this, right?
Yeah.
It's relating yourself so kindly. And I think bringing in like a human perspective of just how we all relate in humanity, that this is a normal human experience to fail and to need to try again. I think that builds resiliency. It's interesting. There's so much research out there about how people that are self-compassionate to themselves often perform much better in general. They perform better. They work harder. They study harder the next time. Whereas if they don't practice self-compassion, they're way more likely to give up and to underperform. And the same goes for the workplace.
Wow.
Yeah. Absolutely. I like to think about it as like you were relating that you're not working as hard or as fast or getting things done as timely as you once did. I can totally relate to that. I used to live my life at 100 miles an hour. I probably run at about 40 miles an hour now. And, you know, I'm starting a coaching practice and I'm not getting things done like as aggressively as I would have maybe liked to. But I also have had to realize I'm getting it done in the time frame that is working for me. And so I think sometimes we have to change our expectations of ourselves. We have to be compassionate to say, you know, this is where I am now and everything it will be in its perfect timing. That's not permission to procrastinate, but it is permission to say, this is what I'm capable of doing now. And with everything on my plate, these things are realistic. And I need to give myself room and space and compassion to be able to make that allowance, right?
Yeah, for sure. And the cool thing about it, too, is those tragic, super hard moments are such great teachers. And they teach us to slow down, which, to be honest, there are things before in my life that, like, I think I was running too fast. I don't think it was the best thing for my spirit, for my soul. I think that there was a necessary need to slow down and to focus on what's most important. And so that's the cool thing about these teaching moments, this tragedy, is it literally forces you to slow down when you're in survival mode and to look around and make really proactive decisions of what am I going to keep in my life and what can fall away? What actually doesn't matter a lot? What conversations, what gossip have I participated in that I just don't have the energy for? And you know what? I actually don't want that in my life anymore. So it's kind of this, it's almost like, I don't know. Of course, I go to an Eminem song. That's perfect for this. No, but there's a song called Cleaning Out the Closet. That's where my brain went. But like, it's this process of kind of cleaning out the closet of picking up things and looking at it. And now I'm thinking of Marie Kondo and does this spark joy, her whole way of doing things, right? But like, do I want to keep this because I have more of a limited threshold of what I can handle right now because of the increased stress. And there's some real beauty, I think, in that process, which I'm still going through.
Yeah.
Okay, I have a question for you. You mentioned to me offline, you've said online today, you've got connection and compassion. But offline, you were telling me how you now are speaking a lot about connection and compassion over contention. So let's talk about that. I love that you're working with your children and helping them be resilient. You're developing and next level resiliency in yourself. Let's talk about this connection over contention as you see it in the world around you when you're visiting these different groups in different cities as a speaker.
I just think we have such a barrier in front of us to getting work done and to having positive work culture and culture at home when our default is division. And I think that there's a lot of reasons for why I think we've seen a lot of the country and just in our day-to-day have a default to divide. It's almost very trendy in a way now to be very black and white about things, whether it's politically, theology. I mean, it's just, we just all want to be right about what we believe. And I think 9/11 was a great time when we really saw the country come together, right? And we really saw what can happen when we choose to connect, right? And unfortunately, in recent events, there's been a lot of division over things that have happened politically. And there's been a lot of reasons to choose to be angry at our neighbor or to feel like, you know what, you're too different from me. I can't relate to you. And I mean, if you look at the research, Oracle did some interesting research where it talks about how of the participants that they surveyed, these are all people at work, 78% said that they felt like the pandemic had severely affected their mental health. 78%. 53% with anxiety, 53% depression, 52% anxiety, and 32% with PTSD. So like people are really struggling right now. And the last thing we need is more contention and more divisiveness. Stanford Medical has all this research about how human connection is actually what heals these things like anxiety, like depression, even suicidal behaviors. And not that that's the only resource, but human connection, there is no replacement for it. And so I just think we do not have more time to be more divisive and more contentious, but to really lean in and to connect. And the research backs it up. Not only does it feel good, but it backed up scientifically. And so, yeah, I have this kind of this shift and I'm still doing all this ICU and compassion and connection, all that. But I've really felt this narrowed shift inside of we have got to choose connection over division if we want to see success.
I love what you said that we need to be mindful of how we kind of default to divide. Like it is kind of our default now. I think of my kids arguing with each other or a story on the news or certainly in politics. Mm-hmm. We don't default to, hey, tell me more so I understand. We default to that division and how damaging that is.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
You know, I recently had a relationship with a woman that I, you know, a friendship, let's be clear about that. Just in today's
I was like, oh, we're going there. Let's do it. Cool.
No, a friendship. But anyway, we were having a conflict and she just defaulted to it being done. And I'm like, you know, why isn't the default coming to seek understanding rather than to seek my agreement on where you're at? And I never felt heard. And I'm like, that's okay. You don't have to hear me. But in return for that, we're not going to be able to have any connection. And I stated to her, you know, this could be a beautiful moment. This could be a moment of growth for both of us. And she's like, I don't see how it can be that way.
Interesting. She wasn't even willing when you put it in those terms.
Yeah.
To take that.
And she ended the relationship. And I was like, but I was okay with that because that's not a relationship I want in my life. Right. But I think I agree with you on this whole connection over division, and that it is the default. There's so much out there. Like, if your parents ever did anything that was offensive to you as a child, just cut them out of your life. Like, that's all over TikTok, you know? There's, like, no seeking understanding.
Yeah, boundaries have now become isolation. Right. I'm just going to walk away from anyone, any responsibility.
Which is not a boundary, by the way.
No, I know, but that in the name of.
Right.
In the name, or in the name of tolerance, we just put up with everything. I mean, we've...
Right. So we have this...
Pendulum. Yeah.
There's a lot of, like, self-help and all of these coaches out there, which I'm going to be one of them, but a lot of them, I am one of them. What am I saying?
What am I talking about?
I am one, but you see it a lot in this kind of self-help, self-awareness movement where people are talking about boundaries, but they're not actually even boundaries at all, because boundaries are what we keep for ourselves to keep ourselves safe and to allow in what we want. But people are using boundaries to say, you're out.
Yeah.
To try to control.
Again, that default
people,
to divide.
Right. To try to control other, and boundaries are not for others, they're for ourselves. So,
oh, so good. Okay, we have to take another break, which is so sad because this conversation's gone way too fast. We will be right back with our last segment. Okay, Julie, we always love talking to you. You've got so much to share with us, and these minutes have gone by so quickly. I would love to know in this last segment, tell us a little bit about what resilience training looks like to you on the road. Walk us through maybe if you're preparing for a keynote address or what that process would look like as you're trying to engage with the audience. And what are you learning and realizing in that very moment of being the presenter in these group settings?
So interesting. So some of my most recent gigs, one was in Maine, and I'm based here in Utah, and one was in California. And then I've done quite a bit here in Utah. I have a keynote tonight I'm preparing for. Something that I found fascinating is that my niche, I speak primarily to leaders now, but before in years previous and here and there, as I choose, I'll speak to teenagers as well. And it's so fascinating to me that a lot of what these teens are needing to hear to build their resilience, to build connection with their parents and with their teachers and to feel understood and feel like empowered that they can do it, a lot of what they're needing to hear is pretty much word for word the same things that leaders are telling me they need to hear and that their followers are telling the leaders that they need to hear. Like, I think that's been one of the most mind-blowing things to me is I'm like, we're not that different. We all are just, this is like our first time through life, and we all kind of need the same things. It's actually pretty simple. We all want to feel like we're enough. Like, all of us get insecure about the position we're in. We all feel like have imposter syndrome. Like, these leaders that worry if they're measuring up and they're like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to do this, right? We all need that. These teens want to feel understood. They want to feel heard. They want to feel valued. It's the same thing that these coworkers are saying they want from their leaders. And so I think that's been maybe one of the most fascinating things as I think about human connection and the way it can help build resilience is really just to never take for granted how much it means to someone to feel understood, to feel noticed, to feel valued. In my keynote, I talk specifically, the keynote's called The Connected Leader, but I talk specifically about these three mantras: I see you, I appreciate you, and I trust you. And we talk about how those three things, those three needs as a human really change the culture at work. When people feel that, when they feel seen, when they feel appreciated, when they feel trusted, they can handle more difficult situations at work. They do have greater resiliency. Those hard conversations are just way easier when they're built upon those three pillars. And so maybe that's been the most interesting is how these different audiences, I've seen the same tears and I've heard so many similar experiences from people about how that feeling appreciated, trusted, and seen has impacted their life and really up-leveled their ability at work. I mean, I just had an example this morning. I was playing pickleball. And my kids were watching me and I was this girl, she was just kicking my trash. She's a good friend and she's a monster. And so I love playing her. She makes me better. but it was 8-0. She was up 8 and I was 0, and I was just getting skunked, and it was hot, and I was done. And then one of my kids said, good job, Mom, you're like, you can do it, and said something. And I came back. She still beat me, but it was 11-9. And I was like, the only thing that changed is someone told me good job. Like, someone was like, you can do
somebody
it. Good job, Mom. You're doing
you.
Good.
Oh,
yeah,
I love
and it's
that.
Such a simple, but I told the kids, I was like, do you see what's happening to me right now? All of a sudden, I have a reason to prove you right. You know, and they're like, oh, okay, Mom, another teaching lesson, right? But I'm like, look,
hey, that's
what
the life
happened.
Of being the child of a speaker, right? Like, you're always analyzing every movie you've ever seen, every incident.
Yeah.
Like, Julie, I love this so much. So say those three again. I see you.
I see you. I appreciate you. I trust you.
Wow. Those are powerful in the workplace. I'm constantly thinking of my children at home, right? That's my most important workplace and my most difficult, to be honest. Do mm-hmm. all of my children feel that I see them, I trust them, and I appreciate them? That's going to be something really good for me to work on. And how beautiful that it then came back that it was your child trusting you to have the ability to play well in a pickleball game. Like, how beautiful is that? They're learning from you. I love that.
Yeah, it was a special moment for us to share and for them to see, like, you impact me. Like, moms need that too. Like, once again, moms need to hear it. Kids need to hear it, right? The CEOs
regardless
need
of
to hear
age
it.
And position.
The teenager needs to hear it. None of us are above that. None of us are too
None
big
of us
for
are
that,
done.
For needing that. No, and it just buffers those speed bumps more and more. It builds that resiliency of, hey, I can do hard things. I have that support around me. It's already built. Like, you know, when Amy passed away, you could feel there was panic for so many people. Oh no, did I build a good enough relationship?
Yeah.
This panic
Is
of,
it too late?
I need to spend all the time with you. Is it too late?
Yeah.
And I was so grateful. I've done a lot of stupid things in life, but I loved my sister hard. That was a good thing I did. We had a really special relationship long before she ever was diagnosed with cancer. And I'm so grateful for that. Because then it was so natural to care for her as she passed. I didn't feel panicked that I hadn't said enough. I felt like we'd said everything. I felt like I knew everything. She knew exactly how I felt about her. And I knew exactly how she felt about me. And I'm so grateful that we had built that buffer. So it created resilience in our relationship to have really hard, painful conversations and for her to allow me to serve her in really intimate ways. And I really pay honor to the idea of that human connection and just building that now so that you can handle when those speed bumps come.
Well, yeah, just back to that original analogy, those speed bumps or bumps in the road, that the tender connection and relationship you had with Amy became the shocks and suspension to get you both through. And I love that it carried you both through that cancer journey that wasn't miraculously healed and solved and everybody lived happily ever after. Like, cancer ultimately took her life and left her children and her husband and you and all of her loved ones and friends, and yet left a legacy and a strength and a peace and just a purpose that will stay with all of us. I still think of and admire Amy and the lessons she taught me in the brief time I knew her. So thank you for sharing you with us. Thank you for sharing her with us. Thank you for sharing your brilliant mind and speaking messages with us. I did write down as you were talking one more brilliant statement. You've said so many. This is all our first time going through life. Like, could we all just chill out a little? Like, we're all rookies here, right? We're all trying to figure this out. And whether you're in Maine or California or Salt Lake City, Utah, or anywhere else, we really are going through so much more of a common human experience than we probably realize. And that alone allows us to connect and be compassionate toward each other. Less judgment, less comparison, less competition, and just more connection. So, Julie, oh my goodness, I feel like we just need to invite you in the studio every week because you could uplift us and teach us over and over and over again. Thank you for joining us again today. We love you. I see you. I trust you. I appreciate you, Julie. And I'm excited. We've only got a quick minute or so left. Where are you going next with your speaking business? What or your writing business or just kind of this life of impacting and influencing?
So I am actually starting to work on another book. It's good for me to say this publicly. So then it's going to happen.
Some accountability.
No, but and some good accountability. Yeah, I'm starting to work on another book, and I am just developing a couple different keynotes other than the Connected Leader. And I have one called Leading with Magic, and I've developed training with them. I've been doing more workshops. So I'm just kind of expanding what I teach in the Connected Leader, and that's been really exciting. So yeah, lots of exciting things to come. There may even be a new sister podcast to ICU coming very soon as well. So
where do we find
you? I just have
too
many dreams, but it's going to happen.
Hey, but you're a dreamer and a worker, so I love it. Where do we find you? Where do we follow you? Where do we learn more?
So, well, Jenny, you can text me because you have my phone number, but everyone else. So my website is julieleespeaks.com, and then Instagram's julieleespeaks. Facebook's Julie Lee Speaks. I'm on LinkedIn.
Okay, so super easy. Julie Lee Speaks, Julie Lee on Facebook, Julie Lee on Instagram. Okay, we'll link that in our show notes. Everyone go find and follow Julie Lee. Let's all be more connected. Let's be more compassionate. Let's not default to divide, but let's bring ourselves together and just find that human experience that can kind of give us all the buffers we need through the shocks of life.
I love everything you shared with us today, and it's just so on point, you know, just on point. And I love what you shared with us. I look forward to getting to know you better, and I'll be in touch with you soon. And thank you for coming on our show today.
Yeah. And to all our listeners, thanks for tuning in another week, another episode, hopefully another lesson or two about resilience. If you're listening and you like what you've heard, please go find us on your favorite podcast platform and give us a like, a rating, and a review. It helps other people find the podcast as well and helps us know how we can improve the show. Also, we're always looking for wonderful stories to share, and we would love to know what you've lived through, what you've learned, what resilience means to you. So please reach out to us. You can email us at rrpodcast@ksl.com. You can also find us on Facebook or Instagram at Relentlessly Resilient and Podcast. There's a button on social media for the Relentlessly Resilient podcast page where you can actually schedule an appointment to chat with Michelle on a quick phone call to go over what story you might share and what direction that might go, and then we can get you on the calendar. Quick thanks to our producer, Kellyanne Halverson, here at KSL Studios. We are excited to be with you and look forward to talking to you next time.
Remember, whatever you do today, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles others are dealing with in their lives. Have a great day.